Well, hello and welcome to ASI Cast number 152. And today's guest is no stranger to the podcast, making, I think, a record fourth appearance is Ampere's Guy Bisson. So welcome back, Guy.
Thank you, Richard. Glad to be here.
Now, for the last few years at our annual conferences, Guy has been chairing our sessions on subscription VOD and streaming, but he wasn't with us in Nice in November because he's relocated to Los Angeles to represent Ampere over there in the US. So we're hoping over the next year you'll be able to give us a few perspectives on what's shaping up to be a watershed 12 months for streaming services. Now, it's a critical
Absolutely.
time. Sorry, it's a critical time for Netflix given the increased competition, economic pressures on subscriptions generally, and the recent launch of their advertising tier. So, what did their latest results reveal, and how did that match up with what Ampere was expecting?
Yeah, it was an interesting quarter, this quarter for Netflix, because it was the first since they've launched the advertising tier. And I think as analysts, we were quite excited about what the results would reveal about the performance of that tier, which is, of course, now crucial to their future growth and their future revenue story. I'd say that I was slightly disappointed at the lack of detail. But to be fair to Netflix, they were only 8 weeks into the advertising strategy at the point that they released the results. What it did show, however, was that there was a return to growth. So after their shaky start to the year, with a couple of quarters of fairly significant subscriber decline, the launch of the ad tier seems to have effectively taken them back in time to the growth rate, to put the growth rate where it was before they had those couple of very shaky quarters. So what we've seen from the ad tier and from those initial results is a resumption of growth across the board. Some early indication from Netflix that they are not seeing significant churn down. So where there is where customers are switching tiers downwards, they are switching from the lowest tier, not the higher value tiers for Netflix. And then further indication that it's also acquisitive, i.e., giving them new customers that they didn't otherwise have. So generally positive, certainly early days. And what they did speak about was that the revenue impact would be seen in the latter part of this year. So that, along with another important initiative for them, which is a crackdown on password sharing, management was saying would bring in significant revenue growth really going into third and fourth quarter of this year.
Now, they've always been fairly tolerant of password sharing on the basis, I assume, that it was all about reach, that the more homes that they were able to reach, the more people would become addictive, and then they eventually would crack down. So I'm guessing we're in that phase now where the revenue is more as important, if not more important, than just having reach across homes.
Yeah, it's two things. I always refer to it as a marketing cost to not crack down on password sharing. And I agree, that's, I think, how they saw it. But they're at a very different stage of maturity now where growth, customer acquisition is much, much harder to come by, especially in Western Europe and the US, the wealthier, more developed markets. So how do you maintain growth in that sort of environment? Well, you can either increase prices, or you can crack down on the sort of gold bar that's been sitting on your mantelpiece untouched until now, and crack down on password sharing and acquire more customers that way. And I think that's a big part of the strategy for this year.
How easy is it to crack down on password sharing? I mean, are they presumably that they'll be more aware of studying IP addresses and geography? I mean, is it something that is straightforward to do and they just haven't, or are there some further challenges in terms of how they actually do that?
I think that the challenges are really with perception among customers, because if you crack down too much, or you make the experience difficult in any way of viewing content that you have, after all, if you're a legitimate customer, because when by using tech to crack down, you ultimately also impact legitimate customers with extra checks and extra flags. And I think that's the balance that is quite difficult to get right. I'm not sure every platform has that right. Netflix has been quite hands-off in terms of chasing their customers for questionable password sharing, whereas others have not. And I think that balance is absolutely essential to maintain customer loyalty and brand loyalty and perception.
I guess the other interesting thing, and it might be for another podcast, is the whole area of customer retention, which my experience with the SVOD services is that it's pretty easy to leave them and pretty easy to come back. If you try and leave Sky, you go through about 10 levels of persuasion, discounted offers, follow-up emails, return to Sky type emails, whereas so far the SVOD services have kind of, I guess it, there's a cost related to customer retention. I'm just wondering if that's something in the future that, particularly, you know, being able to offer people an ad tier now as a, perhaps, you know, reeling people back in from the brink of leaving, whether that might be a focus, or whether these global companies are so automated that the staff involved in doing that sort of thing might be prohibitive.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Clearly, an ad tier is a defensive measure as well as a revenue generative measure in terms of giving people a lower cost option to churn down to rather than leave. Again, I think that the balance with the ad tier is customer retention is definitely part of it, but they are also very much on the content strategy for customer retention and also continuing where they can to acquire customers. And they still talk in their results quarterly announcements a lot about the success of the content, what's been big, what's coming up that's going to draw in new customers and keep customers happy. And it's that continuous flow that has been core to their strategy and will continue to be core to the strategy of the advertising tier as well. Also, with reference to Sky, I think they're in a slightly different position. I've experienced the Sky sort of retention strategy as well when I was based in the UK. They're much more flexible because they're a higher priced product. So they can come in with significant discounts and incredible offers to retain customers. Slightly less flexible when you're at the $15 to $20 price point in terms of what you can do around discounting. And as you say, of course, Sky have a big call center that enables them, and customer support team that enables them to put resource into that, whereas perhaps Netflix does not.
Now, you've mentioned there didn't seem to be that much detail about ad performance, perhaps unsurprisingly, given these are early days, but there have been some reports about them having teething problems with targeting systems initially. Is there any insights on that, or is that just a bit vague at the moment in terms of the problems they're having?
Yeah, it was definitely vague. As you say, they singled out targeting issues. They weren't specific on what those targeting issues were, but they said that that's something that they need to get better at. To be fair, again, they kind of launched into this market from a standing start. And it's not an insignificant thing to get an ad sales team and an ad tech launched within the time frame that they have done. So I think we expected teething problems, whereas with a Disney or an HBO, whose parent companies are well versed in selling advertising and delivering advertising through their channel businesses, we perhaps wouldn't expect such teething problems. But targeting in itself is an interesting segment. Yeah. Again, it's one of those questions of how far you go with targeting and where the balance is between over-targeting and over-repetitiveness of advertising and advertising themes versus being a bit broader, having some of that happenstance advertising that can be so valuable.
You mentioned Disney. Do we have any idea yet of how the ad tier that Disney Plus launched in December is doing?
Again, it's very early days, I think. And when we have the next results, I think we'll almost be in the same position we were with Netflix this time, that it's still too early days, and it's going to be a couple of quarters or 3 or 4 quarters before we have any real insight. But as I say, I think that the studios that are hugely vertically integrated businesses have been in the channel, linear channel business for years. Probably will have fewer issues than a completely new entrant like Netflix.
You mentioned the emphasis they place on, and not just Netflix, but the VOD players generally on quality and exclusive content. But obviously, that is up to now hugely expensive and not easy to produce. Do you think that Netflix is going to have issues with regard to meeting the deep pockets of companies like Apple and Amazon, who are effectively subsidizing their VOD services from their core businesses, as opposed to Netflix, which is a pure play business? I know some observers are predicting the golden age of streaming might be coming to an end in terms of limited budgets and things like The Crown, and we might be seeing less prestige dramas and more reality shows.
Yeah, I think there's many points within that question. I mean, firstly, we are seeing a slowdown in scripted content commissioning, in the US particularly, but actually globally. There are other factors, the outlook for the economic situation globally, for example, the fact that Netflix, who is one of the leaders in terms of driving new commissioning, has had that shaky few quarters. So there are a number of moving parts in terms of that. When we're forecasting a slowdown in content spend next year, where it's been growing at high single digits over the last few years, percentage-wise, we see it dropping to 1 to 2% over the next couple of years before recovering again. But I think content strategy remains so crucial. And the fact that Amazon and Apple commission at a far lower rate still than Netflix gives some indication of how willing they are to leverage that other business in terms of really going full on into the content market and the original production market. Netflix has also been really successful with some of their original acquisitions, exclusive acquisitions, sorry, that they badge as original. So these are titles that they might buy in that have been successful maybe in Europe. They acquire exclusive rights for the Americas and badge them as originals. And those have been highly successful and valuable to them, our data suggests, and a slightly lower cost way of getting original, in inverted commas, content. So there are lots of strategies that can be employed. I don't think we've seen the end of peak TV. I think we've seen an adjustment to what we might call peak TV. But going forward, I see still a healthy original production market.
And are you seeing a trend towards more regional commissioning, not necessarily just for those regions, but sort of sourcing foreign language programming in the hope that it will go global in the way that things like Squid Game and Lupin have?
Yes, and that's partly because of where the growth is coming from. So hidden in the results, if you drill into Netflix's most recent quarter, if you look at the quarterly performance, it appears that the US, Europe, LATAM are all growing strongly again, whereas Asia is maybe a bit slow. If you look at the annual numbers and the growth, actually, over the year, the US declined because of those two very weak quarters. LATAM, Europe was effectively all the growth came in Q4, similar for LATAM. And then you've got Asia, which was the biggest growth region in the year by far, by some significant factor. So I think content focus has been shifting for some years beyond the shores of the US. So more than 50% of content commissioning now from Netflix is outside the US. But we're also seeing a shift from some of those early markets of focus, like Latin America, towards some of the Asian markets where Netflix sees particular potential and still has a lot of headroom for growth. And just to come back on one of your earlier points on the drama and scripted commissioning and what's happening in that market, because we are in a more mature market, one can utilize lower cost content as a retention measure. And that's why we've seen a big upswing in reality and light entertainment in terms of commissioning for the streamers. And that was kind of turbocharged by lockdown, because that type of content could continue to get made. And it never really fell back again, as we've now kind of come out of COVID, or certainly on the path to normalcy in many markets.
Looking at the wider market for AVOD advertising VOD, I think one of the other big stories, at least as far as the media trade press has been concerned over the last couple of years, has been what are called FAST services. Now, I don't want to do a deep dive on those in this particular podcast, but I'm intrigued to understand what your definition of a FAST service is, and how you see them developing in over the next year or two.
Yeah, so there's two aspects. There's the technical description of what a FAST service is, and then there's the consumer perception, I think, of what a FAST service is, and they're both important. So I think we're all familiar with what we call AVOD, advertising supported video on demand. The key being that is on demand, i.e., you go in and you pick the show that you want to watch and then you watch it. FAST channels, which stands for free ad-supported streaming television, very similar in respect that they are technically pulling content from effectively an on-demand catalog, but they are playing it out in a linear fashion to a schedule. So to the end consumer, and this is crucial, they are free linear channels. Technically, they're streamed from an on-demand catalog to the consumer. They are linear channels. And one of my thoughts at the moment is that FAST is simply a temporary terminology, because I think all of these distinctions, which to the end user are effectively meaningless to the average consumer, will disappear. We won't talk about FAST in a few years' time. We will simply go back to a distinction between free TV and pay TV, both of which will be streamed. But there's no need for all this complexity as we move through the transition that we're going through and have already largely gone through the pay television. As that transition happens in free television through AVOD and FAST, we will simply again go back to the simple description of free TV, pay TV.
Well, that's a good point to end on, because it's positive in the sense of anything that makes things simpler in the future is good, because we certainly in the media industry love to flood conferences with acronyms and new acronyms. So having a more simple definition around free and paid and linear and on demand would be a good thing, I think. So anyway, I think we'll leave it there for the time being. As we mentioned, we're hoping to revisit you live from your LA office at various points during the year, coinciding with significant things happening, hopefully, because it's shaping up to be a really interesting year. And who knows, hopefully we may see you at our event once we've confirmed where it is in November. But in the meantime, thanks for taking time out from your day, Guy.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure.